Welcome to a new episode of Africa with André, where we celebrate Africa one story at a time.
Then they sent through the kids and then they came holding our hands, and then we knew now we were welcome and we could go into the circle of this community.
I am very excited about today's episode. Well, actually it's the first of two episodes, and it's about a country that is not normally associated with tourism, Angola. The Angolan government wants more visitors to their country, not only to diversify its economy, but also because the country has so much to offer. That's why the Angolan Tourism Ministry, together with the Kleber Group in Frankfurt, invited 10 travel agents and tour operators from Germany and Switzerland to visit the country for a few days in June 2025. And I was allowed to go along. It's a really beautiful coincidence that this opportunity came along shortly after Angola was mentioned in my last Rovers Rail episode. The first voice you heard was that of Irene Boaventura. She is one of three Angolans that I had the opportunity to chat to for this episode. You will meet her and Pepe and Richard a little bit later. If you're now wondering, why would I visit Angola? What can I expect to see and do there? Then you would not be the first to ask me that. And that is exactly what I asked of two of my co-travelers. Anke Budde is a travel agent and co-organizer of the trip we're going on, and Susanne Laye is a travel journalist. And I wanted to hear from them about their expectations of Angola before we boarded the flight.
Ich bin die Anke Budde. Ich bin die Präsidentin der Allianz der Selbstständigen Reiseunternehmen.
I'm Anke Budde. I'm the president of the Alliance of Independent Travel Companies. And I am also a travel agency owner. I'm here because we're co-organizing this trip with 10 tour operators from Germany and Switzerland.
What are your expectations of this country?
I don't actually have any expectations. The reason is simply that I've never thought of Angola as a tourist destination. So I sat down and Googled it, and I was completely surprised to find it has 1,200 kilometers of white sandy beaches. It has lots of sights to see and a varied nature and culture. And now I'm really excited, because what I do know already is that it's still very unspoiled and that there's still little tourism infrastructure. That means it's a country for explorers, for someone who wants to get to know Africa in its purest form. And yes, I'm prepared for anything, and I'm looking forward to being surprised.
My name is Susanne Laye. I'm an editor for the magazine Touristik Aktuell.
What are you expecting on this trip?
I haven't been expecting so much before the trip. I don't know much about Angola, so I will go there open-minded and see what's coming, and expect it will be very modern, the capital, Luanda, and exciting landscapes.
My own thoughts were pretty similar. Here's what I wrote down as my expectations while I prepared for the trip and this podcast. I expected a friendly country. I thought that the capital city, Luanda, would have a visible, modern, wealthy part, but also a poorer part. I expected a country that is determined to open up to tourism, but that not all of the infrastructure that we normally expect is there yet, that it's still in development and being built. I thought that the vibe in Luanda would be similar to cities in East Africa, but that it might feel and sound different with maybe a Brazilian touch. And my feeling was that the hotels would be functional, but not necessarily have much charm. Let's see if Angola meets our expectations. Before we dive in, here are some quick facts about the country. Angola is the seventh largest country in Africa, and it's located just north of Namibia on the Atlantic Ocean. It's about 3.5 times the size of Germany or California and has a population of about 30 million people. Of that, about a third lives in the capital city. Angola has one of the youngest populations on the planet. About 70% are under 30 years old. And even though the country has large oil reserves, about 50% of the population lives in poverty. You pay for goods and services with a currency called the Kwanza, and it is so humid at the coast. I did not expect that. But I think we should start by rewinding the clock to give you a brief history of the country.
In the 6th century, long before international borders, various Bantu-speaking people lived in the area we now call Angola. By the 15th century, the area was home to powerful African kingdoms like Congo and Ndongo. This is actually where the present-day country gets its name. Angola was titled used by rulers of the Ndongo Kingdom. That late 1400s is when the Portuguese came along, sailing in with dreams of trade and, unfortunately, a dark chapter of history. the slave trade. In fact, Angola became one of the biggest sources of enslaved people during the transatlantic slave trade. But Angola wasn't about to give up without a fight. Enter the legendary Queen Nzinga, a fierce, clever, and fearless ruler who spent decades outsmarting and outmaneuvering the Portuguese in the 17th century. She is still celebrated today as a national hero and symbol of resistance. Despite her efforts, Portugal tightened its grip and Angola officially became a colony. Fast forward about 400 years, and the country is restless again. After years of simmering frustration, the fight of independence kicked off in 1961, led by groups like MPLA, UNITA, FNLA. It wasn't quick, but by 1975, Angola was finally free. Unfortunately, it didn't come with a peace, though. The country plunged into a 27-year civil war, with global Cold War powers picking sides. The MPLA, backed by the Soviet Union and Cuba, and UNITA, supported by the US and South Africa. It wasn't until 2002, after the death of rebel leader Jonas Savimbi, that the guns finally fell silent. Today, Angola is rebuilding and showing the world that despite its complicated past, it's a country rich in culture, natural wonders, and resilience.
A lot of these periods of history are very visible in Luanda, from the Portuguese fort above the city, to the statue of Queen Nzinga downtown, and a Soviet-style memorial called The Rocket, which was erected for the first post-independence president, Antonio Agostinho Neto. Our trip started with a walking tour of Luanda. The ministry was so excited about our visit that we were accompanied by photographers and press every day. We were even seen on national news on TV. But there was a point when we politely had to ask the photographers to please step aside for a moment so that we could take our own photographs of, in this case, a beautiful street. Luanda has some amazing street art, and we wanted to capture that together with the ladies selling fried bananas and peanuts. The city is a mix of colonial buildings, modern glass skyscrapers, and middle-class apartment blocks that could use a fresh coat of paint. There are massive SUVs and older-style cars driving around, and there are young men helping you park your cars, as in so many cities in Africa. And there are countless kids with mobile shoeshine shops offering to clean your shoes. Each one of us in the group took time during the trip for a walk through the city or a jog on the promenade, and we all had the feeling that our presence was completely uneventful for the citizens of the city. We felt very comfortable. On our walking tour, we got to see the cathedral, the fortress of San Miguel, which the Portuguese built in 1576. We had a tour of the Anthropological Museum, and we spent a few peaceful moments in the cute Church of Our Lady of Nazareth, a calm oasis in the city center. Now you're probably also wondering, how are the hotels? What was the food like? Simply put, the 4-star and 5-star hotels in Luanda are very good. Most of them have had a focus on international business and are now opening up to the leisure and tourism business. Food was delicious. We had excellent seafood, tasty meat dishes, and even an Ibiza-style restaurant at the beach in Luanda one night. What else did we see near Luanda? We spent a little time at the National Slavery Museum, which was very moving. Slavery is a big part of the history of Angola, and any visit to the country should definitely include this museum. Before Europeans arrived, various forms of slavery already existed in Angola, mainly as punishment or as part of war. But the arrival of the Portuguese in the late 15th century turned the region into a major hub for the transatlantic slave trade. Over the next centuries, an unbelievable 6 to 8 million people were captured and shipped across the Atlantic, mostly to Brazil, but also to the Caribbean, North America, and Europe. Although Portugal officially banned the slave trade in 1836, illegal trading continued for decades. The legacy of slavery remains a powerful and painful part of the country's history, which is visible at this National Slavery Museum, which is actually located at a site where the slave ships were loaded. The exhibits focus on the history of the slave trade, and you can see chains, shackles, and documents from that time, and stand in a room where enslaved people were baptized before being shipped abroad. Baptism was mandatory for all slaves. Our next stop was more positive. We drove a little further south to Miradouro da Lua, or the Moon Viewpoint. This is a surreal landscape of cliffs and canyons that resemble the surface of the moon. Wind and rain eroded the soft limestone over time to these spiky peaks and deep little troughs. The photos that you can find online really don't do it justice, but we were very impressed. If you're there, I suggest you take a walk to the end of the viewing area, where you get a good overview of the size of this incredible landscape. It's located along the coastal road south of Luanda, and there are so many baobabs en route. I have never seen so many of these majestic trees. It was just beautiful. While we were in Luanda, we attended a workshop to get to know some colleagues from the tourism industry who already organize tours and programs for visitors to Angola. It was exciting to learn more about the country and what there is to see and experience. One interesting conversation I had was with Pepe Hatewa.
Hola, Pepe.
Hola, how you doing?
If a client says to me, why should I visit Angola? What do you say?
Yeah, I will say visit Angola because of the people in general, city people, the tribes, and then the nature, the landscape, and the architecture. The modern architecture, but the colonial architecture will be the classic one.
You mentioned that there is a big difference between the people living in the city and the people living in the countryside, the tribal people. Tell me about that.
There's a very big difference because unlike other African countries or neighboring countries, our people in the cities, a lot of them don't really speak the native language. Yes, some do because some come from different areas, but a lot of people don't really speak the native language. This is because of history. Now, here in Angola, at one point, the native people were forbidden to speak their native languages at school and in public places. So that very much brought things to the way it is today. And looking at the tribes and the native people in the rural areas, in the villages, they hardly speak Portuguese. So it's the total opposite. They've been isolated for a very long time due to some of the main, you know, old and recent events in history, such as slavery, colonialism. Before Angola's independence in 1975, we had 14 years of colonial war. They isolated themselves as well. And then 27 years of civil war, they isolated themselves as well so that their livestock food wouldn't be taken and that their young people would not be taken to war. So they have isolated themselves for such a long time that a lot of them are in hard to reach places. So today we have over 80 groups and sub-ethnic groups dispersed all over Angola.
That's fascinating because I know that in cities like Nairobi, for example, people have their family homesteads in the countryside outside of the city and they visit often. But now from my discussion with you, there really is a separation of the people who live in the city, speak Portuguese, seldom speak the dialects or the tribal languages, and the people in the countryside often don't speak Portuguese.
This leads us quite nicely to the next stop on our tour, the country's second biggest city, Lubango. Here we also met some tourism industry colleagues, including a local tour guide called Richard Ngunga. As Richard only speaks Portuguese, Bruno from the tourism ministry translated for us.
I asked him, what are the three reasons someone should visit Lubango?
É uma terra acolhedora, uma terra especial.
So, yes, what he said is that the main reason is that Lubango is a very welcoming city. It's a very welcoming province where tourists normally feel at home because of the climate. The other reason is also the diversity of sightseeing that can take place. So he's talking about the Fenda da Tundavala, he's talking about Serra da Leba, you know, and all other points that would definitely attract tourists to come.
Lubango is also a city that has the festival, the Lubango, in August every year. It's a 30-day festival celebrating the cultures of the region and of the country. What is the importance of this festival for the people of Lubango and the region?
The main reason is the opportunity to showcase their culture, because he believes that people that are not in close contact with their culture don't really have dignity, you know? So that's the main advantage that they see from this festival, the main benefit. People from outside is basically getting in contact with the diversity of cultural showcase that takes place, because they don't only showcase the culture from Lubango, from Wila specifically, they also show cultures from other provinces around the country. So it's a mixed experience that would definitely interest the tourists to take part in. And also, it's very authentic still, you know, because a lot of Angola is still unexplored. It's a diversity of cultural exposure and obviously benefits not only the locals, but the people that visit the province as well.
How can I, as a visitor, experience the festival? What will I see or experience?
one of the main experiences that you have is the cultural dance. It happens right in the beginning of the festival. And then throughout the festival, there's a series of activities that take place, like fashion shows, there's car racing, obviously the diversity also of other cultures that are showcased. And he believes that every tourist that visits Lubangu during this season never feels outside from home, because, you know, the diversity of visitors makes people feel welcomed.
What is your favorite thing in or around Lubangu?
So he said, in Lubangu, the human warmth, the hospitality, basically.
Bruno, thank you very much for doing the translation for this. What is your favorite place in Angola?
I would have to say that my favorite place in Angola would be Quedas de Calandula, which is in Malange. So it's basically the waterfall, the biggest waterfall that we have here. It's an amazing sight to see, you know, it's unbelievable. I mean, before I went there physically, I saw a lot of videos, a lot of photographs of it, and I had kind of an idea of what it looked like. But once I went there, it was quite impressive. It's basically my favorite place to visit.
We all love the look and feel of Lubango. It's a 90-minute flight from Luanda, south and slightly inland, and is at an altitude of 1,800 meters, so it's noticeably cooler and not at all humid. The city of almost 1 million people has a much more spacious feel than Luanda. Instead of many high rises, it has wide roads, open spaces, and beautiful Art Deco buildings. There is a 200 meter high plateau next to the city, which not only has the name Lubango written on it in big letters, a la Hollywood, but also has a 30 meter tall statue of Christ the Redeemer, built in 1957 and inspired by the statue in Rio. We'll chat about the waterfall and other sightseeing that we did in the next episode. Right now, I want to take you back to Luanda, where I also met a young woman who moved from South Africa back to Angola recently. I loved her energy, so please meet Irene Boaventura. Hello, Irene.
Hello, everybody. It's nice to meet you, and thank you for visiting our beautiful country.
I consider myself very lucky that I did come here. Irene is part South African. She is Angolan by birth, but spent many years in South Africa, largely during the Civil War here, and got a lot of tourism experience in South Africa in some amazing hotels. How do you like being back?
First of all, I will always love South Africa. It raised me, made me the person that I am. My love for tourism started in South Africa. So I wanted to bring a little bit of that back here. I mean, there's nothing like being in your own country and being in your own land and soil. Working at the Intercontinental opened up my eyes in terms of who are the people that travel into Angola? Who's coming to this country? I always had the dream of one day having my own startup in tourism. So I think this project was organic. Ventura Africa had to open.
Give me three reasons why someone should visit Angola.
First of all, many people don't know Angola. So come here. Come here for the landscape that is so varied, from the oldest desert in the world to green lush jungle waterfalls to the most spectacular tribes of people. Come for the culture and the people, and come here to discover something that few people have discovered.
A lot of people have heard about the Okavango Delta in Botswana. I did an episode on that. And there's always a big celebration every year when the waters from the river fill up the Okavango Delta. What a lot of people don't know is that those waters originate from Angola. And you organize tours into the region that is the source of the Okavango. Tell me about that.
So the Okavango River is one of the largest waterways in Africa. It's in the southeast part of Angola. So the highlands of Wambu province is the source of the Okavango River. And the river does not have an outlet into the ocean. So without the waters of Angola filtering down that space, there is no delta.
One of the things I asked you in our discussion was, I live in Switzerland, and the source of the Rhine River that goes through Europe, the source of that is in Switzerland. We drive past the source every now and again. It's a beautiful little stream. So then I said to you, what is the excitement about visiting the source of the Okavango? Surely it would just be a little stream. And you showed me some photographs of these winding waterways. The photographs looked very similar to what we can see in Botswana. So my question then is, why should I visit the source of the Okavango in Angola when it is arguably easier to visit it in Botswana, but there must be a difference?
Yes. So I think for me, the entire riverway is beautiful, but at the source, there is a small community that lives within and survives off the Okavango River with fishing specifically. When people go to the mouth of the Okavango, you're not only discovering a space where few people go.
Yeah.
Discovering perhaps bird species or plant species you've never seen before. I love it that you can also connect with the culture in this area, which is Wambu. The people there are very nomad. They live in small little tribal villages, and it's very rare to still find that authentic way of life of living off the earth, living off the water. It just shows you the value that water and river plays to the people and that we build communities around them.
Yeah.
And that for me is different as opposed to being down in the Botswana Delta and perhaps seeing a big elephant down there. You should be curious to know where's the flow of this water coming from.
This is not an area that you would visit to see big herds of elephants or big herds of animals. You would visit it to see the landscape, the nature, the water, how people interact with the water. There is an interesting fact that you mentioned that the giant sable antelope was considered extinct, but it was rediscovered in Angola, I think, 10 years ago?
Yes.
It was rediscovered, and that can be seen in that area if you're lucky, right?
There is a slight possibility of that, but don't go in with a premeditated idea.
I think we can both say you don't go to Angola to visit the animals. There are many other neighboring countries that are great for visiting animals. The area of the source of the Okavango is an area that does not have a lot of tourism infrastructure, so most of your clients that would visit it would probably be on some kind of a camping expedition or on a couple of days camping in between hotel stays somewhere in the country. And you mentioned that you would camp nearby some of the villages that are in that area. How can I, as a visitor, experience this culture without offending anybody? Because I can't just walk into the village and say, hey, no, don't mind me. I'm just taking some photographs, you know, thanks very much. Can your kids stand there for me? We can't do that. That's offensive. How would we experience your cultures through one of your tours?
I think that's a very, very good question. And I think that's why developing infrastructure of a tourist company that can manage these travel like ourselves. One big part of going into these villages is that you have to know the soba. You know, you walk in and then you greet very humbly.
The soba is?
Soba is an elder of that community, of that village. He represents the village. So the first person you go and see is the soba. He's considered, I won't say the king, but he's the authority in that area.
What some people might call the chief.
Yes, the chief. You go and you ask your blessings. You state your intentions, which is something we always do. We want to go in organically. We never want to enforce something that the community does not want. And even, for example, when we do the camping sites, we are not inside the village, but rather on the outskirts of the village where we are still protected and safe, but just slightly on the outside of their space. And then when they're ready, they then welcome us. I remember on my last trip, we camped outside. The next morning, the children came to come and fetch us.
It's always the children that welcome the strange faces,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So they send the children after, I'd gone first and introduced myself and explained that we had this group of people with us. Then they sent through the kids and then they came holding our hands. And then we knew now we were welcome and we could go into the circle of this community. And, you know, they don't speak English. They don't speak Portuguese. They do speak their own native language. So communication was not through words. It's me looking at you and really just feeling and trying to read what you're trying to say with your eyes, the way they would maybe touch you or the way they would give you a gift and the way you would accept it, you know, with both hands and that passing of something you drink. And that's really how we communicate with most of them. It was through just body language and cultural exchange that we get to experience their life and they get to open up their community. And we go in these waterways with the fishermen. They feed us. We eat meal with them. And we leave the world more thankful to know that such quiet, pristine space exists where people are just kind and welcoming. They don't have much, but sure, do you take a lot back after that visit?
Which is exactly what I was just thinking about. It sounds like a very mind-opening, eye-opening trip to be in a peaceful place, to see how some people live very differently to what we know in mainly our cities. What's in it for the village if we come and visit?
We always try and look at what are some of the things that the community perhaps needs in this area. We always communicate responsible tourism with our guests. So sometimes when they find out that they're going to a village, in their itinerary, automatically they think about the kids. Do they need something? Should we bring something? So we obviously try not to bring things that is too foreign to the community. And sometimes it's just taking something back, and that's already supporting. Because the women, a lot of these women do arts and craft. So handmade carvings that you can buy and take back with you. They live off these sustained sort of living. Some of our meal items, we get it from them. Fresh milk that's been drawn from a cow, we'll buy a litre or two. Perhaps seafood, they've just caught some fresh fish. And we go and get our substance for the time being that we're there. And a responsible way of giving back.
What is your favorite place in Angola?
So my favorite place is where I went for the very first time when I arrived in Luanda. It was the Namibe Desert.
That's the old desert in the southern part of the country, bordering towards Namibia.
Correct. It's one of the oldest deserts in the world. And I was fascinated with the ideas of seeing sand dunes next to the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that, so I wanted to see that. So that being my very first trip, I will always love Namibe province, the dunes, the ocean. It's just, my God, it's, I don't know if you guys have watched the movie Dunes. If you thought that landscape was fantastic, come and see the dunes and the sand in Namibe province. You are completely as remote as you can be.
Irene, thank you so much for your time, for doing what you do for Angola. I wish you all the very, very best with Ventura Africa.
Thank you so much.
Many people associate Africa with seeing animals, but Angola really is not a country you visit to see wildlife. That said, there are some fascinating stories to do with animals though. Irene and I touched on the giant sable antelope. These larger antelopes weigh about 220 to 240 kilograms and have massive horns that curve back, often well over a meter in length. The antelope was discovered in Angola in 1914, and after it was last seen in 1982, it was considered extinct. But to everyone's joy, and thanks in part to modern camera technology, it was rediscovered in 2005. There are not many of them, but everyone is super happy that they're not extinct because this antelope is also one of Angola's national symbols. Another impressive animal story is that of Operation Noah's Ark. About 70 kilometers from Luanda is the Kisama National Park. During the Civil War, most of the animals that did live there died, partly through natural causes, but also because people hunted them, ostensibly to feed their families. When peace came to the country, Operation Noah's Ark relocated about 150 elephants and 150 other mammals from South Africa and Botswana to Kisama National Park, via road transport to the coast, a few days on a ship to Luanda, and then by road onto the park. Pretty cool, hey? I want to end today's episode with a quick story about one of my favorite spots in Luanda, the Palazzo de Ferro, or the Iron Palace. It is a bright yellow two-story building in the center of the city and made entirely of iron with lots of filigree work on it. Legend has it that the house was on its way to Madagascar in the 1890s when the ship it was on ran aground off the coast of Angola. There are no official records about when it arrived or under exactly what circumstances. Many believe it was designed by Gustav Eiffel, yes, he of the famous tower, but recent research has shown that it may well have originated from Scotland. Regardless, it's a marvelous building that was renovated a few years ago. I've put a link in the show notes so that you can also see it. I hope you enjoyed episode 1 of our journey to Angola, where we met some interesting colleagues and spoke about Angola's history, cultures, and the two largest cities. In the next episode, we'll chat about what else there is to see in Angola and meet our guide and tour organizer, João. If you want to see some photos of Angola, you can find them from my trip on my Instagram page, Africa with Andre. I've put a link to that in the show notes as well. Please give me a follow and let others know that might be interested in Angola. Till the next time.